My mum was such a fan of not making a fuss that when we went out to a restaurant as a family, we all had to order exactly the same thing in order to make it easier for the waiter.
News stand-up for Sunday nights.
Frankly, when you're an eight-year-old girl, you don't always fancy a fillet steak and a bottle of Rioja.
Including Lucy Porter and Tom Allen.
As a child, all the other kids, they wanted to build a fort. I built a conservatory.
Beginning with a personal look at mental health from Ruby Wax.
We're besieged, all of us, by bad news. So now we're frazzled, thinking, what's going to nuke us next? Is it going to be North Korea or too much salt?
Ruby Wax Frazzled, on Sunday night at 7:15 on BBC Radio 4.
Now on Radio 4, Miles Jupp and the panellists return for the new series.
We present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp. And welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from The New Scientist, read by Neil Sleat.
The UK government has pushed back the date of its proposed porn firewall after struggling to get it up since January.
Our thanks to Colin Robertson for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and Angela Barnes. And opposite them, on my left, Hugo Rifkind and Zoe Lyons. Andy, who might be bringing a motion to put things in motion?
Well, I'm assuming this is Theresa May and Syria. And if you're listening to the repeat, well, then that's a good sign. It's a chaotic situation, a maelstrom of infinite alliances. And Theresa May is having to formulate a policy to deal with this. And the only upside for her is that from here on in, Brexit's going to look a lot less complicated, you know, compared to trying to sort of negotiate your way through a global crisis that is being escalated by three narcissistic sociopaths and Boris Johnson. And in all this, somehow, Theresa May has to work out how to get through all this mess. And the real problem is, I think, that somehow everybody has managed to paint themselves into a corner. Putin, Trump, all the protagonists have done so much macho posturing that to back down would represent a huge loss of face. And the first principle of conflict diplomacy is that you always allow your opponent a way out. And it's very hard at the moment to see where there would be a way out for people. I mean, I think the only way out that would be acceptable to all parties would probably be if President Assad stepped in front of a bus. That's not very likely. I just wanted to end on a positive note.
I mean, I wouldn't want to be in Theresa May's situation at the moment. People are saying that she's going to make this decision without parliamentary approval, but of course she is. She was not going to seek parliamentary approval. She couldn't get approval from Wonga.com at the moment, could she? I mean,
I suppose a way through it is to not think about our domestic political implications, because that's the way people sort of tend to play it, won't they? But if she says, right, we're going in without getting parliamentary approval, then she's doing a thing that's kind of madness in terms of her own sort of reputational problems, or Labour people will go with it or vote against it, and that will create another feud. But of course, these are things that are completely irrelevant, but they are the things that will probably underline the decision.
Yeah. I mean, I think they probably will and probably should have a parliamentary debate. I mean, I don't want to have to watch it. Well, seriously, because
What if that's the only condition on which they're prepared to debate? I mean, well, look, we've all come in for work. The least he can do is turn on the television.
No, because we know now what will get said. There'll be a lot of sub-Churchillian posturing, and then there'll be a fair bit of liberal virtue signalling, and it'll just... I'm not sure it will get us anywhere, having a parliamentary debate, because what we need, and I never thought I'd say this, is good old-fashioned politicians. Unfortunately, most nations seem to be binning those in favour of so-called disruptors and charismatic businessmen. If ever there was a time for skilled diplomacy. It's now, but, you know, we've got Boris and we've got, you know, America's
Trump
got Trump.
Punching out tweets with his fists. I mean, that's that's how it feels like what he does it? Them, just sort of...
He called Assad, didn't he, a gas-killing animal. It's sort of a really clumsy phrase, and I thought, well, it would be once it's been through its original Russian through Google Translate.
Hugo, you've probably got a solution to this.
I mean, what really bothers me about the idea of World War III is I haven't the time. I've got a lot on. I've got a lot of work. I've got the boiler guy coming round. If we must have World War III, I can do it in like next Tuesday. There's a whole situation. It's mesmerisingly awful. Russia is the most mesmerisingly awful bit of it, really. Somehow the entire state of Russia has turned into this bizarre performance art where they just say these completely crazy things. They'll say anything. The official Russian position yesterday was there was no chemical attack. The position today is nobody should bomb Syria because it'll destroy the evidence of the chemical attack that they say there wasn't anyway. You know, they just and the Russian embassy in Britain is almost the worst. They just sit there making up these really mad lies to upset people, like there's no moon or, you know, Pimlico's disappeared or, you know, the Queen's an aardvark, just to, like, annoy people. It's like the entire embassy is just run by stone students making up crap. So we then talk about it on the radio like this now.
Tweeting out the plot lines of Ealing comedy is his news.
Russia have got a sort of... Because they've got previous on this, haven't they, with the poisonings in Salisbury, and they insinuated that Britain had done it, and now in Syria they're insinuating that it's the rebels that have done the... Basically, their geopolitical stance is whoever smelt it dealt it.
I was talking to someone about the comparisons with Cuba, and my feeling is that it's not as scary as Cuba was, except that what is scary is that it feels like there's nobody in charge. You know, you always felt that Kennedy and Khrushchev, they were the boss of the two protagonists, whereas now there's so many actors in this story and you feel like no one's really in charge of them, so...
Right now, I'd be perfectly happy to find out there's an Illuminati. Someone's in charge. Good.
This is the developing situation in Syria. It's one of those weeks where you can't be sure who we'll be at war with by the time of the Saturday repeat. You're always at the mercy of events with pre-recorded programmes. It's why Gardener's Question Time spends so much time talking about perennials. Theresa May is now stuck between either escalating a potential conflict with Russia or leaving a murderous dictator to destroy his own people. The poor old thing only signed up to be PM so she could decimate workers' rights. Now look at the state of her. There's likely to be dissent within the Parliamentary Labour Party about whether to back military action. I only hope this won't be used as an opportunity to destabilise the leadership of Jeremy Corbyn, said a worried Bashar al-Assad. Jeremy Corbyn has asked for proof that the attack came from Syria before going on to ask for evidence that all those Messerschmitts back in the day actually came from Germany, then questioning whether the Armada originated in Spain, and finally pointing out we cannot be certain that Kendall Mintcake genuinely comes from Cumbria. 2 points to Andy. Angela, what stormy situation provoked a raid?
The FBI have raided the offices of Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen, and they're looking for evidence of payments to Stormy Daniels and another porn actress, I believe. I think the best way to find evidence of whether payments were made to Stormy Daniels is to check her bank account. And that should be pretty easy to do, to get into her bank account, because we already know her mother's maiden name must have been Daniels and her first pet was Stormy. What's your porn star name, Miles?
Sorry.
It's first pet, mother's maiden name. Mine is Sweetie Griffiths.
I'm Timmy Trotter.
Mine genuinely is Oedipus Steinberg.
This raid has got to be a fishing expedition, hasn't it? Because I can't believe that the FBI are really that interested in pornographic actresses and whether Trump suppressed payments to them, because they raided Michael Cohen. Now, Michael Cohen has been Trump's bagman and lawyer and fixer for 20 years. If you look at Trump's career, his whole attitude to the law is that it doesn't apply to him. And his great mentor, of course, was Roy Cohen, who was the lawyer to many a mobster and whose affectionate nickname was the Antichrist. And so there's no way that Trump's employing a lawyer with scruples.
Yeah, but they got Capone on tax.
Yeah,
they?
Well,
they need to get him on something.
I think they're probably going in there, and of course, if they do find that Michael Cohen has done something illegal, then they can flip him, as they say, and see if they can get him to testify as to stuff that Trump has done. And I suppose the plan would be they'll get Trump to give evidence under oath, they'll ask him a question to which they know the answer, and then hope that he tells a lie.
I can only imagine Michael Cohen has a massive shredder
in
his office.
It must be a
I'm just relieved that he's actually got a lawyer who looks a bit like a lawyer. Because I remember when they wheeled out his doctor and he looked like the Big Lebowski. Remember him? Yeah. Like they found some guy sleeping in a dumpster outside and put a stethoscope on him. And he was going, you know, so Trump is the healthiest president, really the best. There's never been a healthier president. Like, you didn't write that. He gave you that and you read it out. I love the way the BBC reported this whole story, that there was this great line in it where it said, Trump's response... an unprompted extended tirade that used the word disgrace or disgraceful 9 times, hints that the president is angry. Yeah.
There is that thing with the Stormy Daniels, that he denies it, whereas Cohen says, the money was paid to her, but I paid it, not him. He didn't know anything about it. I didn't tell him I was doing it. It was like a sort of surprise thing. She was paid, I was paid $130,000 to keep quiet, and Trump was saying, well, even if she was paid that money, it wasn't for that, because we never did anything together. So... Trump's argument is that she was given $130,000 not to talk about the fact that they haven't had sex.
Done anything.
Now, you can make money from Trump from not talking about not having sex with him. That sounds like there's a lot of easy money to be made out of it. I'd be prepared to not talk about not having sex with him for half that. And I could get my ruddy sash windows reweighted.
I've not had sex with him several times.
Well, I can believe that.
She's great, by the way. Stormy Daniels.
Is she?
Oh, is she?
I meant.
How much?
She's very funny.
What she hasn't done yet is given any good sort of explanation as to why she slept with Donald Trump.
Well, in the interview, they said to her, "Were you physically attracted to him?" And she just said, "Would you be?"
This is the FBI raid on the premises of Donald Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen. The FBI carried out the raid, but we don't know what they found. Possibly the box containing the imprisoned cricket that would normally be serving as the president's conscience. Michael Cohen claims that he paid Stormy Daniels with his own money and without Trump's knowledge. Now that is service. My lawyer moans when I ask him to pop round while I'm away to water the plants and let the kids out for 10 minutes. The Mueller investigation still has a lot to unearth, especially if it's going to provide an answer to Jeremy Corbyn's question, can we be sure that Donald Trump comes from America? But we're still waiting for the answers to all sorts of troubling questions. Is Mr. Cohen hiding evidence of a federal crime? Was the hush money paid to porn stars a demonstration of the illegal use of campaign contributions? And, of course, most importantly, is Trump's face the same colour as his willy? Do join in the conversation on the News Quiz Twitter feed. Hashtag Willyface. 2 points. Hugo, who's been networking with a lot of new friends?
This would be Mark Zuckerberg appearing before American lawmakers to try to explain what Facebook was all about. Everyone thought it would be this total amusing farce from the beginning because Zuckerberg's so weird and he doesn't understand humans, and everyone thought he'd have his shirt on backwards and his tie in his mouth, and, you know, and he'd try to speak and it would just come out like that noise you get when you unplug a USB drive again and again. But actually, it didn't turn out like that, because what no one had realised is that American senators particularly are much, much stranger than Mark Zuckerberg. Because it's, for me, anyway, it's possible to be quite intimidated by the idea of senators, particularly when you contrast them with sort of British politicians. You kind of think there's a sort of BAFTAs, Oscars thing going on, that theirs are going to be sort of bigger and better and much more glamorous, and it's rubbish. They're all mad old bastards. It was like... certainly the Senate hearing was like this sort of bunch of incredibly old men asking inane questions like, what colour is email? And how come the mouse still works when it hasn't got a ball in it anymore? What's that about? And, And relative to them, Zuckerberg came across quite normally. And on the rare occasion they did manage to ask him a question that did at least dimly relate to Facebook, it was so incredibly basic they could have just Googled it. And while I suppose mistaking Mark Zuckerberg for Google is a special sort of insult, in general, I thought he came across quite well. His share price recovered enormously. And the whole thing was intended to show that American democracy can hold technology to account. And we found out that it can't because it's rubbish.
I thought the very first sentence was rather revealing because he said, Facebook is an idealistic and optimistic company. And he thought, well, they're optimistic in the sense that they thought they'd get away with it. And idealistic, well, it's not very idealistic to not tell people that they'd had their details stolen for a couple of years, wasn't it? And it's not very idealistic to employ armies of lawyers to try and keep that secret. And it's not very idealistic to refuse to come and talk to people about it and just send minions. So I think the problem might be that he's been using an online dictionary, you know, one of, and maybe not a very good one, maybe one that defines idealistic as self-serving, empty bullshit.
It was a personality app, wasn't it? Anybody's got the time to fill out a Facebook personality app, I really don't think is having much influence on world politics at the moment.
I think that probably the issue is not so much the dullards who filled out the personality quiz, but what nobody knew was that all of their friends' personal details could also be
harvested.
I mean, my daughter was scraped, as I believe the term is, and they're saying today there might be a big class action. So, you know, ka-ching.
I'm very conflicted about it, because on the one hand, I find it very sinister the way Facebook targeted advertising works. I do genuinely think it's a threat to our democracy. On the other hand, I'm aware that the only adverts that seem to ever get targeted at me for some reason are either for mattresses or for a pair of male leggings that make you look like a mermaid. I don't know what interests of mine they're picking up
on. Are they
to show
both things that you've recently had to burn in your garden?
My nan's 95. She's brilliant. And she's got a little laptop. She's really with it. And I helped get her on Facebook a little while ago. She just wanted to see what the fuss was about. You know? She's only got 4 friends. So it's really...
Aww.
I know. Then there were 3.
This is Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg's appearance at congressional hearings in the United States, where he explains social media to baffled politicians. It was basically an opportunity for a lot of elderly politicians to tell Zuckerberg about their technological bugbears. At one point, one of them pulled out a toaster and asked how to adjust the width for muffins. As a result of the hearings, the share price of Facebook went up, which meant that Mark Zuckerberg earned $4 billion simply for spending a few hours explaining to old people how the world works. I do hope John Humphrey's agent was taking notes. In my honest opinion, it's integral Facebook collects and shares a certain amount of data. Otherwise, how will I know that the couple we met on a walking tour of Tuscany have just bought a Bichon Frise, or that my sister is now a racist? Cambridge Analytica targeted political messages at users by creating online personality quizzes, although alarm bells should have rung when the Which Character from Friends Are You quiz contained questions like, would you vote for a bigoted sex offender if he promised to cut your taxes? Such a Monica move. 2 points to Hugo. And at the end of round one, the scores are Andy Hamilton and Angela Barnes have 4, and so too do Hugo Rifkin and Zoe Lyons. We start round two with an excerpt from David Attenborough's very successful Wonder of Eggs programme website.
Some birds can extract the calcium they need from their bones, but not tits.
Our thanks to Paul Southwold for sending us that. Andy, who's been royally snubbed?
I think it's proven fact that nothing causes more fights than weddings. And Prince Harry and Meghan Markle have been drawing up their guest list. And they were presented with a very difficult problem as regards VIPs, because obviously every invite can potentially constitute a snub. You know, if you invite Theresa May, then you've got to invite Jeremy Corbyn, and he'll probably stand around looking like he's not having a very good time, disapproving of the cake. So they've opted for a guest list of normal people, whatever they might be. And it's probably quite a shrewd move, I think. They kind of dodged the bullet. I think they're inviting the Queen, who is a VIP.
I mean, what, they're inviting sort of 1,200 commoners to gather on a field outside while the wedding's going on, with 1,000 other strangers just going, how do you know the couple then? I've seen them on the telly. I've seen them on the telly too. They look lovely. They do look lovely, don't they? They do look lovely. They look lovely. Ooh, sandwiches. I mean, dishwater.
Apparently Fergie has only been invited to the evening do, and that pisses me off. Only getting invited to the evening do, that they can get lost, can't they? I'm not giving up another Saturday to be an extra in the disco scene in your wedding video. No, it's good. I think the reason they're not inviting any world leaders is because they can't invite Trump. They can't, because he once publicly claimed that he could have slept with Princess Diana. And at first I was like, you're deluded, mate. And then I looked at Charles and thought, well, she's not fussy. And also, apparently they said that the guest list was small because it's a small church and Harry's only fifth in line to the throne. And I couldn't work out who the others were, and after 10 minutes I realised I'd forgotten Charles.
The rows have already kicked off, haven't they? Because there is an estranged half-sister of Meghan Markle who is already complaining.
Thank God you said of Meghan Markle. I was thinking, my God.
They'll want to do it in as low-key a way as possible, but there will be, nevertheless, quite a tight sort of security ring, which will presumably make the entire thing slightly less relaxing than they would have dreamt of. We've got this amazing cake from this amazing lady called Patak, and all the dresses are going to be absolutely fabulous, and up here we've got these beautiful, very carefully designed things. We've done all the things on the tables, of course, and there's snipers behind all of those.
Do you know what? I'll be excited when there's a royal gay wedding. It's about time. Because one of them must be, statistically.
They're all quite gay.
Well. Do you remember when Norman Tebbit got all upset about gay marriage and he said, what if the Queen were a lesbian and she decided to marry her lesbian partner and they decided to have a child using a sperm donor, would that child be heir to the British throne? Yeah. I don't know about you, Miles, but if there is one family that could do with the old gene pool being whitening a little bit.
Maybe what that's what they've invited the 1,200 people for.
Yeah. Let's mix things up.
These are the latest developments surrounding the wedding of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle after it was announced that political leaders would not be invited to the ceremony. The invitations have been crafted using American ink on English card and handed out with an unmistakably German disregard for people's feelings. The couple's decision to wed on a Saturday goes against royal tradition, but then so does sharing a loving relationship with the person you're marrying. Times change. The couple have asked the Lord Lieutenant of Windsor for a selection of locals from a range of backgrounds. Seems a bit much. I just got them a John Lewis voucher. Two points to Andy. Hugo, have a listen to this. Like pebbles on a beach, kicked around, displaced by feet. Oh, like broken stones, you're out trying to get home. Hugo, why is there a pebble dash to the checkout?
There's this shop called Muji. One of the things they sell in Muji, apparently, is a packet of stones for £8.95. And it's decorative. And the idea behind the story, it was in the papers, is that it's like this sort of ridiculous, terrible scandal that you might spend £8.95 on stones. But I was thinking, I mean, I live in London, that seems quite reasonable. Where the hell am I supposed to get stones? You know, I don't... I'd have to get a train to Brighton, which would take hours and cost more than £8.95, and then I'd get there and I'd go to the beach, because it is covered in stones, but all those stones are covered in, like, you know, MDMA and the vomit of people on hen nights. I don't want them in a little bowl in my living room next to the potpourri, so I think I'll be going to Muji, thanks very much.
When I first saw the article and it said fake Japanese stones, I thought it was a tribute band.
Hang on, they're fake stones.
Yeah, they're made them out of porcelain something or other. They're not
they're
real.
Porous, aren't they? So they can absorb the essential oils that you pour over them and relax and meditate about what a complete idiot you've been to.
Is there anything less essential than essential oils?
Nothing less essential.
I filled my flat with loads and loads of those little coloured stones because I've got a lot of friends with small children, and if I fill the place with choking hazards, they stay away.
To pet stones. Do you remember that craze?
Yeah, they had eyes on them.
You could take them for a walk. I mean, we didn't have one, but... Because, you know, if you have to go away, you worry about leaving.
And you would... What, you'd decorate the stone yourself?
No, I don't think so, no, because that might be cruel.
You'd go to a... So you'd go to a stone shop, or would you get them in from the wild?
No, I think you go to a stone shop.
Especially a stone shop.
You know, because a stone that you bring in from the wild is going to pine, isn't it?
I've got some, and then I poured them into a sock and wandered around a remand centre asking people who the daddy was now. This is the high street retailer Muji, who are charging customers £8.95 for a bag of Zen pebbles. Or, to put it another way, pebbles. They are meant to bring a zen-like aura to the living room, and there really is nothing more zen-like than staring blankly for hours into the middle distance upon the realisation that you've just spent a tenner on some pebbles. Still, amazing stuff. I got through two packets before I realised they weren't sugared almonds. What I want to know is what happened to people getting out of the fresh air, going to the beach and stealing pebbles for themselves. Norfolk is not going to erode itself. 2 points to Hugo. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Andy.
This is from Matthew Holland, and he says he spotted this typo on a packet of Jetstream pens. It says, quick drying ink helps prevent smearing and left-handed people.
Hugo.
This is sent in by Ursula Hishkorn, and she saw it in the London Evening Standard, and it's an advert, and it says... Interested in being paid to help with medical research? Are you healthy and aged 18 to 65? Are you a man who's had a vasectomy, or a woman who's postmenopausal, or who's been surgically sterilised, or who has an IUD? If your answer is yes to all of these questions... you might be suitable for one of our ongoing studies.
Zoe.
This was found on the Mail Online website homepage by Dave Wood in Berkshire. It says, vibrators have been advertised in the Women's Institute magazine for the first time ever, leading UK veterans of the group to express their outrage at the distasteful plug.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Andy Hamilton and Angela Barnes have 8, but this week's winners are Hugo and Zoe with 9. Before we leave you, here is an excerpt from a church service sheet sent in by listener Jeff Pullen.
Our toilet is situated through the door at the top left-hand side of the altar. It's possible to receive communion while seated. Just ask the church warden.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Angela Barnes, Hugo Rifkind and Zoe Lyons. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by Menial Sleet. The chair's script was written by Sarah Campbell, John Hunter, James Kettle and Laura Major, with additional material by Simon Alcock. The producer was Joe Nunnery, and it was a BBC Studios production.